Welcome to Update One, the podcast of the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Update One provides a forum for listeners to learn about national stories focusing on news, politics, and current events. Now, the latest edition of Update One.
Hello, this is Art Swift, the managing editor at Gallup, and welcome to Update One. Today I'm joined by Amy Parnes, senior White House correspondent for The Hill and the co-author of Shattered, the number one New York Times bestseller, wow, about the 2016 Clinton campaign. It is a pleasure to welcome you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, in Shattered, you detail Hillary Clinton's campaign and all its highs and lows. What did you learn the most about Secretary Clinton while writing the book?
Well, it's funny. I learned different things this time than I learned last time. Last time for our book HRC, I learned just what a student she was and how prepared she came to each meeting. This one was a different beast. I think what I learned is that she thought that she was prepared and came to play, but and overlearned in some ways. But in fact, she underlearned and underperformed and hadn't really learned the lessons from 2008 that she should have learned, which was surprising to me because I thought, given that she had 8 years of time to think about her loss and she did kind of piece it together in the end and figure out how she lost, I thought she would be able to come up with a more seamless campaign, and it was surprising to see all the flaws in it.
As I was reading Shattered, I wound up hating Hillary's campaign manager, Robbie Mook. I mean, seriously, it's like I couldn't stand him and what he appeared to be a tone-deaf way of approaching a presidential campaign. Why was there so much anger towards him among Clinton associates?
I think, well, there were various factions inside Clinton world, as there always are. But I think a lot of people didn't really like the fact that he was so over-reliant on science and on data and data analytics specifically, and how every campaign decision was driven by that. And the fact that, he was so frugal in the end and didn't give people on the ground kind of what they needed, even though they had been grumbling for months that, you know, people couldn't even get lawn signs in their front yards and the grassroots efforts on the ground were kind of suffering as a result. I think it's a fair portrayal. Some people actually who we interviewed really like Robbie Mook and said he has really good intentions, but they're still kind of unclear as to why the campaign was driven in the direction that it was driven to.
Does Hillary Clinton at this point blame him at all to this day?
I think she might be inching towards that. You heard her kind of blame data in a recent interview she did. And I think she realizes that, faulty data is probably one of the reasons why she lost. She was pointing the fingers really at the DNC and the DNC data. Mm-hmm. But I think if she looks more closely, I think her own team was over-reliant, as I said, and to a fault. And, you know, what's funny about it is that people like her husband, the former president, were constantly sounding the alarm and said, okay, yes, use science, but also we need some art and we need mixed into the science and we need to be listening to the people on the ground. And he was getting a different feel on the ground all along. And he kept reporting back to Brooklyn and saying, you know, something feels off. Why aren't we talking to the people who supported her in 2008, to the base of people? And he was right, I think, in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you get such good access in Shattered? I mean, were there other people writing books about the Clinton campaign that you were competing with?
Because we had written a book about her a few years ago, that helped. Both my co-author, John Allen, and I had covered her since 2008 in various respects. And I think we had built kind of a large Rolodex of people within that world and people who felt comfortable talking to us. And of course, we had conditions when we sat down with people that we would only talk to them on background so that they could give us the most candid stories. And also that we wouldn't be releasing any of the information that we had received before the election because everyone was worried about, you know, how it would play before then. So I think, I felt I think that that was why a lot of people felt comfortable with us in telling their stories. And I think that's how we were able to kind of penetrate Clinton world. And it's a hard world to do that.
Right, right. But they weren't necessarily talking to multiple book writers either. I mean, you seem like you were blazing a trail alone, from what I'm gathering.
Yeah, there are other projects coming, I think, possibly next year. But I think we were the first out the gate. And initially, I think people wanted to tell their story because they felt like it was a historical story and it would be the story of the first woman president. Right. And they wanted their fingerprints on that story. I think they had other reasons for talking to us after the fact, after the election. And I think that was because, you know, some people felt like they wanted to clear their name. They heard that we had been reporting on some people and not others. And so what was interesting is that people actually, a lot of people came to us after the fact and said, hey, you haven't spoken to me for your book. And I think that was what was most fascinating about this. What was interesting was after the election, how many people came to us after and said, you know, you didn't talk to us for the book. And I think what they were trying to do was they were trying to clear the names of some people, correct the record, if you will, on other folks and their own legacies inside the campaign.
Was there anything Hillary Clinton could have done to have reversed her bad fortune?
That's a really good question. I think she could have learned some mistakes from states like Michigan, where she had a really explosive kind of fight with her aides that we report in the book about, you know, how she wonders how she lost the primary there. And I think they could have picked up there and kind of had a better run at those states. And instead, they were kind of trying to expand the electoral map and playing in states like Utah.
Arizona.
And, you know, Georgia, states that where they had really no chance. But they felt confident about that they had locked down these other blue states for whatever reason.
Well, based on your assessment of the campaign, is Hillary right that James Comey and so-called bad actors from Russia are the reason she lost the race?
I think my co-author and I have always said that, sure, Russia and Comey played a role in this stunning defeat, but I think that there were other factors as well. Her lack of a message, her over-reliance on data analytics, the infighting that was happening inside the campaign, and there was a little bit of it, especially at the top levels. You had John Podesta and Robbie Mook, who didn't exactly, there was no love lost there. You know, the fact that, like, she really hadn't, you know, tried to change things for the better. And I think that kind of dovetails with her message and hadn't really given people a reason for why she should run for why she was running for president. And one senior advisor told us after, I would have had a reason for running or I wouldn't have run. And that basically says it all. You know, the fact that even inside the campaign, even at the highest levels, they didn't really understand why she was running.
You touched upon data analytics. I think a lot of readers would be curious and listeners as to what's the difference between data analytics model that Robbie Mook had versus traditional polling? Are they similar? Do they dovetail? How does that even work?
They kind of work in conjunction with one another. And people on other campaigns have said you should do both all the time. And they didn't, in fact, do that. We found out at the very end that they didn't actually do traditional polling in key states like Michigan and other places. And they relied specifically on these snapshots of households. They're quick snapshots of, you know, the likelihood of whether they were going to vote, who they would turn out for. And you kind of get, you know, insight into what people are thinking down to their magazine subscriptions, down to little pieces of, you know, their hobbies and interests. And, you know, what they failed to do is they failed to persuade people. It was more expensive to actually persuade people to come out and vote for her.
And that's another point in the book that I never could quite get over. Why was it such a big deal that she not go into debt?
they always felt like they were running out of money, which was, you know, a constant problem. And if you remember in August of that year, she goes off the campaign trail and off the grid and is fundraising for basically the entire month. And that's something that really angered a lot of people, particularly people who were looking across the aisle and seeing Donald Trump crisscross the country and hit some key states that he needed. And so there was some anxiety at the time internally, I think, about why she was doing that. But, you know, people who talked to Robbie said that at the time he was worried that the campaign was running out of money, which is astounding considering that, you know, they had largely doubled what Donald Trump had and what he had in his campaign coffers, and they had a bigger infrastructure, she basically had everything going for her, and yet they couldn't quite figure out the financial situation.
There's a fascinating detail in the book about how the Trump campaign concealed good polling news about Michigan from the media at the end. Did that polling actually show he was going to win the state?
I think, Republicans were getting word about various states and that they were leading. And they were actually kind of scared to tell people that they were because they didn't think people would believe them. And it's funny because we detail in the book very early on in the primary that one of Hillary Clinton's longtime advisors kind of circulates this memo and kind of says, you know, Donald Trump can win the presidency and you should always kind of expect him to, you should always add 3 or 4 points to wherever he is in the polls to kind of lead you to believe that's where he is. And that was interesting in retrospect, obviously, because, you know, that did in fact happen.
What was the craziest part of the book, in your opinion?
Crazy in which way?
A detail that happened, not necessarily in your writing process, but in terms of, was there anything that just really stood out to you as being bizarre or darkly comic or just out there?
There were a couple of details that I'm particularly proud of. One, on election night, our goal was to put you in the room and lead you to, everyone wanted to know what was happening inside her hotel suite particularly. And so we have a couple of details in there that, you know, I'm proud of the fact that there's this grim, everyone in the room is really upset about the fact that she's lost, and they're sitting there, and in comes a cart full of sundaes. there are details like that where, they're all looking around like, who ordered the sundaes? Everyone here is really upset. This isn't some victory party. There were other details in the book that kind of made me smile. Like the campaign had a scandal whiteboard on wheels, which they would, wheel from room to room, which I thought was really funny. I mean, there are moments in this book that our goal, as I said, was to put you in the room and put you there and not just give you, explanations about what was happening and various quotes, but to actually make you feel like you're a part of this campaign. And I hope that's why this book succeeds anyway.
Well, I mean, it's successful for me in the sense of, you're right. I mean, there are fascinating details in there about what people are drinking at certain points and just, what people were wearing and things that really did make you feel like you were in there, especially because it didn't sound like you had much or any direct access to Hillary Clinton at all.
No, we don't talk about who we interviewed for this book, but our goal was just that, to give you the full candid story about what was happening from what people were saying inside the room down to the whiteboard on wheels.
It's great, and you do get a vivid picture of the secretary. I guess fast forwarding it, in your opinion, why is she still out there so much in public and whatnot? Will she run again?
I don't think she runs again. I think she obviously wants to be a part of the so-called resistance. And Someone told me the other day, interesting thought, that President Obama is actually running and doesn't want to be the face of the resistance. So he's running to the background, and here comes Hillary Clinton. She wants to be at the center of it. And a lot of Democrats right now are kind of bewildered by it all, you know, and wondering what she's up to and what this means for her and why she is trying to explain what happened every single day. And people just talked to a couple of people the other day who want her to just settle down and, you know, take a breather and not be so vocal about it. They don't think it's helpful to the party. They don't think it's helpful to the country. And she's not really persuading anyone, about Russia or Comey anymore. I think the people who bought into that have bought into it, and there's no one at the moment who is listening to it and is being convinced by it. So it's really interesting. I do think that she wants to not be at the center of it as a political candidate, though, in the future. I think she wants to help her party, and I think she's trying to figure out how to do that.
Well, that would be interesting. I mean, it doesn't seem like it seems very early to be making any kind of entreaties for fundraising or any of that kind of thing. But I mean, a lot of people I know who I speak to seem to think that if she's not retiring, then she's laying groundwork. So it's interesting to hear you're having written two books about it. I think that you're much more educated on this than most folks.
Thanks.
There is going to be a movie about Shattered. What can you tell us about it? I mean, is it one night? Is it multi-part? When is it going to start shooting? All that good stuff.
So it's been optioned by Sony TriStar, and they want to do a miniseries, but we don't know much more than that. It was just happened about a month ago, and they're hoping to actually do something with this later this year, hopefully.
Really? Any casting choices yet?
Not that I'm aware of. My co-author and I are consultants on the project, but we have a dream cast in our minds of who we'd love to have star, including like Meryl Streep maybe, or Helen Mirren. We'd love any of those lovely women, and I think they would do it justice. But no, we don't know anything else. I wish I could tell you more, but I don't know anymore.
You don't even know what is it going to be on, cable or one of the broadcasts?
We have no idea.
Don't even know yet.
Yeah.
That's new information then. Outstanding. Well, the number one bestseller is named Shattered. It is truly, in my opinion, the sensation of 2017. Amy Parnes, thank you so much for joining us on Update One.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Update One, a production of the National Press Club's Broadcast Committee. You can comment on this show or any episode of Update One by going to facebook.com/PressClubDC or on Twitter @PressClubDC. Thanks for listening to Update One.